Right, so we're going to welcome everyone, welcome everybody. As we speak, please feel free to type into the Zoom chat. It's always very nice to know where people are joining from. So you could just type in your city or your country. Please feel free to type it in there. It would be nice to know where you're joining from. Welcome again. Welcome to everyone who's just coming in and all those who have been waiting for the last 15 to 20 minutes. It's great to have you here. I'm sure everyone is well. More importantly, I'm sure you're keeping safe during this period. So welcome to TechBiz series. I'm welcoming both our newcomers and I have a new name, our TechBiz squad. Those who have been joining us consistently week after week, those are TechBiz enthusiasts. So it's always happy to see you all, both newcomers and those who join consistently. I'm hoping that the newcomers will also become regular joiners as well, because we always provide relevant and practical content. I think what is key is that we also bring to the platform speakers who are authentic and who have gone through the journey that they are talking about. So welcome again. Listen, guys, I want to say something very quickly. I'm sure that a lot of us have joined a whole bunch of Zoom meetings, webinars, trainings, whatever it is. What I really want to encourage you to do is to start putting all your learnings into action. You know, they say that doubt increases with inaction. So the less you act, the more doubt, the bigger your doubt grows, which means the more you delay, the more the fear grips you. So point is, please start where you are. Start even when you are afraid, or even if you are afraid, even if you are not sure. And the key thing is to start, because they do say that clarity reveals itself as you gain momentum. So I'm going to encourage you right now. I hope you have a notepad and a pen. So please pick that notepad, pick that pen now. We're going to do something ever so quickly, right? Open a fresh sheet, please, of that notepad. And divide the page into two. So you're going to draw one line from the top to the bottom. Divide the page into two equal halves. Okay, I give you 2 seconds to do that. Fresh sheet in your notepad. Divide the page into two equal halves from top to bottom. So now you should have two columns, right? On the left, can you please write on the heading, my learnings? Just my learnings on the heading of the left column. And then on the right, please write my actions. Okay? So in the course of today, when you hear a noteworthy quip, you know, anything that you think, oh, wow, this is profound, just write it on the left. But as you're listening to that, ideas are also popping into your mind of what you will do on the basis of what you are hearing. Write those on the right. Those are your actions, your to-dos, basis what you are learning. You know what the writing does? It also helps you commit. What the writing also does is, it makes sure you don't forget. Because usually, in the heart of it, while you are listening, so many ideas are popping into your head. As the listening ends, sometimes you forget. So action points on the right and learnings on the left. I hope you have done that. Can you hear me? Christoph, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Someone says check audio. If you cannot hear me, please.
We can hear you.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. All right, so I take it that everyone has done what they are committing to do, or what we have just agreed that we do. So a quick introduction, I'm Doja Ikeruche. I'm always the host on TechBiz so far. I'm a strategist. I'm experienced in managing and growing businesses. And I've done this in a number of countries within the continent, in Africa, here in Nigeria, in Ghana, in South Africa, and even in a country in Asia, and as well Switzerland. For me, I am very keen to encourage and also to equip others to believe in possibilities and also achieve their ambitions, right? So that's how TechBiz came about. On this platform with Eco Innovation Center, we share relevant and practical knowledge that help your business grow and help you as an individual grow. So hashtag TechBiz, hashtag Eco Innovation. When you hear the quip, by all means, please feel free to post. So quick housekeeping, please mute your mics, or you will be muted even if you don't mute your mics, and type your questions in the chat box anytime that you feel like, so you don't have to wait till the end. Our speaker will speak for 40 minutes, after which we will read the questions in the chat box. But of course, if you want to ask your question verbally, you just need to raise your hand and we will unmute you. Okay, so the slide needs to be sharing. Let's talk ever so quickly about Eco Innovation Center. Can we move to the slide of Eco Innovation Center? The purpose of the center is to leverage two key enablers, leverage innovation and technology to contribute to solving poverty in Africa. And there are four key pillars. The first one is learning. We galvanize it through learning. We equip entrepreneurs with soft and hard skills. And the Tech Biz series is one of those. But we also provide more technical knowledge from the data school that teaches all aspects of data science in order to drive business growth. In the research and sustainability pillar, it's about working in partnership with governments to drive social impact products addressing the United Nations SDGs. Product incubation and acceleration, that is the business side. We bring ideas and MVPs, minimum viable products. We bring them to life as viable businesses that solve real customer problems and thrive as business. So we're going to get quickly into the session of today. I'm sure you're looking forward to it. It's to be taken by Christophe. Christophe, I really need to say thank you so much for taking this on. Despite the fact that it's 12 midnight on your side in the Philippines, we truly appreciate you taking this on.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. So, I mean, we've seen what the talking points are going to be. I think what is most important is Christophe is going to be sharing his own story, right? He's walked the journey for a number of years, worked the previous journey of being an employee, an executive, a top executive in C-suite for many, many years, in fact, decades, and then now this journey of entrepreneurship. And so, well, he knows what it's, he feels what you feel, I could say that. But one thing to announce that Christophe has generously offered is 1 hour of mentoring to one of our participants today. So we're going to pick a participant in the course of the webinar for who Christophe will offer mentorship to. It's fair to call it mentorship, right?
I think that's the best way.
Awesome. So you will be mentoring someone, and we thank you for that contribution. It's just amazing. So we go straight. I'm going to give the screen to you now, Christophe. So you take over now, and the floor is yours. Go ahead to share your story.
Okay. Let me start with putting this on top. Okay. So basically, I feel very honored when I got contacted to be here in front of you and share my story. And I'm going to call it my story or my journey and reflections to my story or my journey. Because in fact, that's what it is. I'm going to start telling you a little bit of background about myself. I come from a Swiss family. I was born in Switzerland, but I basically was not raised there. I was raised in Latin America, between Panama, Venezuela, and mostly Argentina. So I lived over 20 years of my life in Latin America. My parents were expats. Before I moved back to Switzerland and then now 10 years in Asia. But what is interesting about that story is that my father used to work for Nestle for over 20 years. And my brother works there as well. And I used to work there myself. So in fact, we have, I think, 70 years or I think at this point in time, 80 years combined in the family working in a multinational company in the corporate world. So that's why I called my journey and it's 5 years that I left the corporate world. I call it like that, from corporate dinosaur to an entrepreneur. Not because there is anything bad about the corporate world at all. it's more coming from an anecdote that I was telling Georgia that I experienced when I was making interviews with Google and Facebook. I really had the good opportunity to be in the end interviews to get a market head job in one of those tech companies. And I became good friends with the Asian head of that tech company. And basically, when we were hanging out, and I lost against this other guy, which was a Microsoft guy with all the experience compared with myself, having been in food and beverage all my life, he basically told me as a friend, "Anything, you know, don't worry, don't feel bad. You even got here. I'm surprised because, in fact, you guys who come from this food and beverage multinational companies, you guys are dinosaurs." And he meant it well. He didn't mean it badly. So I was first like a little bit in awe, saying, "Oh my God." But then I understood what he meant, and I understood the advantages for them to take someone who was coming from the tech side of a background, rather than a corporate dinosaur. But I think that's exactly the point I want to make. I mean, you may see it as something that is negative, but at the end of the day, that experience showed me that there was, of course, a disadvantage if you wanted to go to a tech company coming from a food and beverage multinational. But at the same time, there is a great advantage of the things that you can bring from a food and beverage company. And the same analogy, in fact, happens also with age. A lot of prejudice about becoming an entrepreneur in your 40s, but I will talk about that later. So my story is basically the following. I had for the last maybe 5 or 8 years in corporate, I was already thinking about making a move. But I didn't know exactly what, which ideas, and where to, how to go about this. Of course, being an entrepreneur became kind of an obsession. How can I do this? But it was like a complete white piece of paper. So what I basically did in the journey, I took like an entrepreneurial sabbatical. I mean, I already had started doing some little investments where I was not involved, and I started to learn from the people who knew. But then I got exposed to a venture capital network, which I was lucky to have some friends that were involved. And I invested thanks to a friend, an entrepreneur, to whom I went, and I said, "Where could I invest some of the money I got from the corporation I left?" And he said, "Oh, you know what? That was 2014 or 15. He said, "Buy some crypto, buy Bitcoin. This is going to be big one day." And make a few of initial coin offerings, ICOs, and I did that. I did like 15 of them or more, or 16. Wow. So basically, that's what I did. And I talked to a lot of people who failed. Talking to people who fail is, in fact, a very good learning curve, because it tells you what they did wrong or what they have to do better to really succeed as an entrepreneur. And in fact, a lot of people are scared to talk about their failures. But at the end of the day, everybody goes sooner or later to a failure in a project, in his life, in an enterprise, or whatever. And I think learning about those failing ventures is critical to understand what you shouldn't do or where you shouldn't repeat. So that was my first step, how I got a little bit immersed. But I was still thinking what idea, where to go. So basically, I then realized some of these controversies which all of us are faced. And me especially, I was already into my mid-40s. So I was like 44, 45. And a lot of people were telling me, "Are you kidding me? You're going to go to entrepreneurship. You're a corporate dinosaur. You've been all your life there. Everybody knows you there. You've done such a great career. Why would you even want to change?" So they challenged. I only received challenge. It was a big risk. You know, it's going to take you a lot of time to really bridge the gap. You're too old. You cannot think the way these guys think. But in fact, nobody was telling me what the advantages are when you are in your 40s. And in my journey, honestly, that was really the case. I mean, I was quite experienced from the background I had. I was working for a multinational company in management position for many years. And I was in seven different countries in three continents. I met people from so many places, had to adapt myself to different cultures. I think that shaped me in a way and gave me experience that I would say a lot of entrepreneurs, when they start very young, they don't have. They have other advantages, of course. But at least this, I would say, were advantages of a 40-something-year-old guy coming from corporate. Focus, determination, you know, you learn, I think, when you go through the mill of the multinational companies, you learn to go through some processes, and you learn process-oriented thinking, project management tools. And I think it makes you more focused, and it makes you really prioritize and apply the Pareto rule, right? The 20-80 rule. So you basically focus on 20% of those things that will give you 80% of the benefit. And so all these tools you apply. Determination. I mean, you definitely learn, not only the young guys who want to make their job happen. When you have been working in a multinational company like me, and you have to bring a few things through the system, which is sometimes very slow, very tedious, and you have to push your agenda through, you learn to become very, very strong in terms of your determination to get things done. And then you have a network. I mean, when you start in your 20s, you don't have yet a network. So you need really to have a solid idea and a solid set of friends and a solid set of investors. So if you have an experience behind you, like in a multinational company, you are able to make a great network. And funds. I mean, you may have funds or not funds, but networking, contact, your career as an entrepreneur, as a dinosaur, basically will help you somehow to get to some funds. I mean, it helps when you are in your 40s and you have built a network professionally. It definitely gives you help. So I would say when you're in your 40s, four out of these five you have, which I would challenge if late 18, 19, 20 something, even 30 something year old maybe have it to the same extent that you have it in your 40s. So I think that was my realization when I went through that process. And basically the eureka moment came. I mean, and that has to come. I think this is critical, that you have an idea that you believe in, that you validate it, that you go through a business case, that you use a SWOT analysis, that you double check it, triple check it with friends all around the world, or whatever friends you have around you. You take all the critics on it. I mean, there's no bad criticism. I mean, you need to swallow it and just move forward and try to understand what the person is telling you. And you try to filter it and apply it and make your concept, your idea better. But you need to find, or you need to trigger that inspiration to really be able to come with ideas. You need, I think, contextual thinking or critical thinking is very important. I mean, I've learned 20-something years in the corporate world in food and beverage. I mean, I can say, it may sound arrogant, but I think I knew what I was doing. So when I was now pivoting into this other world, I think you have to apply what you have learned, but you have to apply it in this new context. So you need to be able to be realistic and put your learnings, the backpack of learnings and assets that you have with you, you need to apply them to this new reality in which you're in. So if you cannot think contextually, it's going to be very, very, very difficult. And of course, analyze your environment. I mean, in the times we are currently with COVID all around, I think it's important that you understand in which environment you are, and that you are very open-minded. I mean, you don't know everything. You cannot know everything. And you need to really put your head around that and try again to get all the ideas from all sides to validate your concept, to validate your idea, to validate your business model. I mean, you need to have that really, really rock solid crafted and proved. And then, I mean, I crafted many, many ideas. I mean, very loose ones, very stupid ones, more solid ones. And sometimes those which I thought, this is it. And then when I went through several layers of checking them, I realized that wasn't really it. And to be very honest, a lot of the investments or the businesses I became operationally involved were not even my ideas. I jumped with others on board. I did joint ventures, and and the example I'm going to share with you is a joint venture I did where I took over a market for them, and I basically became myself involved. I did, of course, also for my own some launches, but today, later on, I'm going to talk to you about Zumu, which is a joint venture I did with two Spanish guys, which live in Singapore, which have created a great company. And I think insights. I mean, what is currently happening is critical that you take the insights of this and try to come up with some ideas, some concept that could basically help you disrupt this new reality in which we live. I think at the end of the day, if you understand what currently is going on, what consumers, people, whoever, in whatever country goes through, you need to try to simplify, facilitate, help them out or from their situation to get back to a new normal. So if you find the product that can answer that need, if you have that insight, you're going to be surely somewhere around an idea or a concept that you should validate. So a few notes to yourself, which I did to myself. And I find this very important because I see a lot of times in these 5 years when I've talked with other entrepreneurs or my former friends or current friends from my former dinosaur life, there are a lot of, in my view, kind of ideas that people have about entrepreneurship and entrepreneurs themselves. So I have four things to tell you. I strongly believe that you should never blindly believe in what supposedly successful entrepreneurs tell you. I see entrepreneurs in LinkedIn or in Facebook or in other social media assets raving around, telling their stories, saying everything they know and so on. But, you know, the reality is they may have great ideas and striking onliners and a great tagline, but a lot of them maybe don't apply to you or very limited. And at the end of the day, a lot of these guys are basically, that's their business model. They're trying to sell something. So they're trying to make you believe in whatever they're telling you because that's how they monetize their business, which is in LinkedIn to sell skills, to be invited to conferences. There are people, entrepreneurs, and it's a great job, good for them. But they live from being speakers, TED speakers at the TED talks or basically at conferences. And in the crypto world where I've been, there are people which only do that. They have no cryptocurrency. They have not created one coin. They have not done anything. They only go to conferences and unite other peoples which are experts. Okay, great for them. But don't always eat from their hand. And in fact, it brings me then to the real experts, supposedly, which are Zuck, Elon, Bill, Steve. I mean, all these guys, I don't even need to name their family names. You know them all. I was always against idolizing these glorified entrepreneurs. I mean, these guys are far from perfect. I mean, they went through their own issues and they are very different from you guys. I mean, they have probably, some of them come from a background where they had money to invest. Some of them come from a background where they were surrounded correctly. Some of them had a fantastic idea that they took from somewhere else and they made it better. So it's so different. The setup is so different because there's so many variables. So I would say you need to make sure that you don't over idolize these guys. I'm not saying Steve Jobs wasn't great. I'm not saying Elon Musk is not amazing. If you look at the Tesla shares now at $1,300, I'm still hitting my head that I sold it at $400 and now it basically tripled within like 8 months. These are great guys. But I would say also Steve and Bill and these guys had their failures before and before the success, they had to undergo some challenges. So again, never underestimate the value of failure and the value of failed entrepreneurs as well, because they give you a huge learning that cannot be replaced in any other way. And I will tell you something this time, yes, my last point is something that everyone tells you, every entrepreneur, and that's something that you hear the most when you go to LinkedIn and you hear to all those supposedly successful entrepreneurs and to the real glorified entrepreneurs, they will always tell you this, never give up. If you have a great idea, if you know what you're doing, if you know you've validated your concept, it's a problem of funding or whatever it is, never give up. Go after it. You will stumble like we are. For example, the business I'm going to share in a bit, Zumu, has dramatically stumbled. We have around 100 shops in Southeast Asia. They're currently all closed since 4 months. It will be easy to give up. We are burning cash, we are injecting some money, and there's nothing coming back, and we don't know when we reopen, but you have to continue. Perseverance. Unfortunately, as an entrepreneur, it's different. When I was a corporate dinosaur, as I said at the beginning, if we lose market share, if a concept doesn't work, if a product launch is a failure, at the end of the month, I always had my salary. Unfortunately, as an entrepreneur, that's not the case anymore. So a last advice I would give on that one is be sure what you're doing. And if ever, make sure you remain in your current business and you only make the final move to entrepreneur when you have proven the concept or your idea, and maybe even better when it's already working. And then you really quit the other one, because else leaving everything behind, this kind of, you know, this kind of super successful, successful stories that basically tell you the guy gave everything up, dropped from university and did it. That's not the majority, guys. That's the minority. And you really have to have something really, really strong to take that risk. Else you will put yourself, your family, and the people you provide to at a risk. That's at least, again, this is my journey. This is my advice. A lot of guys that are maybe already successful may disagree with me, and I fully accept and respect that. But that's what I personally think. So I had a few things that worked. I mean, it's just to share a few ones. You can zoom there, you can Google them. I mean, Ziostel, it's a little investment I did with my partner. It's an hospitality, it's a backpacker hotel. I like to call it luxury backpacker hotel, because that's where people which can afford. I mean, I think probably the main shareholders will say it's wrong, but I like to say, like I saw it from my cousin, when you like to go to, you know, you still want to go to the environment of a hostel where all the backpackers stay when you travel the world, but you still would want to have a single room or a double bedroom. Well, see hostel as that. They have mass dorms, but they also have single bedrooms, and you can be on your own and have a quiet time. But of course, there is also the bar, and there is a rooftop, and there is a discotheque, or there is music. Anyway, so that was a very nice one. Completely closed now, so completely disrupted. In 4 months, closed, nothing we can do. Tough time. With perfume, another small venture, also with my partner. It's about perfume scents, all. In IG, you can find it in IG. It's all online selling. Very nice, very boutique. We like to call ourselves, I forgot the brand now, but we have an international brand that we try to not copy, but they followed us in our Instagram page. So we're very proud, and we try to basically emulate them a bit. And then I invested in Zumu, which again was very successful until we got shut down by COVID. So I'm going to talk about Zumu later. But before that, what didn't work? What failed? The Yard Centennial failed. The Yard Centennial was a great idea. It was open for over a year. It didn't really fail because of the business model itself, but because of the lack of management of the tenant. The idea of the Yard Centennial was, we had a container environment. So we had restaurants, little restaurants built in containers, 40-foot containers divided in two, every container, two little shops. They were selling all different foods, burgers or pizzas or Asian food. And we made it in a very big street in the south of Manila. Worked very well. But we didn't manage the tenants well. So some tenants worked, some tenants didn't work, some were duplicated, so one would go bankrupt. And basically that brought us down. But anyway, it's more about failure. It failed, you have to learn why it failed, take the consequences and move forward. And then I had many, many ideas. Some of them we had a bit invested already and they dramatically failed. Or we killed them in the process of getting there. And many, 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 I'm talking about 50, 60, 80 that we brainstormed over the years, or probably even more. And I think you shouldn't be shy about that. Be open about that, embrace it, and it's great. And the more you brainstorm and the more you think ideas, you will have to kill them as well, and so be it. Anyway, there are a few things coming which we are doing. A lot of them are related to what's happening in COVID, educational robotics. We are into educational robotics. Definitely education from home will become important, education through Zoom, through Skype, and so on. So that's something we believe strongly in. The merge between nutri-cosmetic and nutraceuticals in food and beverage, that's also something that we believe is coming. Drones, I think everybody knows drones. It has been very strong in B2C, but B2B drones have way higher margins and way higher price points, and governments are highly investing across the world in drones, and that's something that's going to come across all the sectors. So, my last point is about the dinosaurs. I mean, as you all know, dinosaurs, they got extinct. But birds, frogs, lizards, that's what I read, they're all apparently descendants of these guys, and they're all there. Why are they there? Because they adapted. And I think it's very important that you guys really adapt. And I think adaptation is not a day of today or tomorrow or whenever or the past. Every day we adapt. Every day we learn. I mean, if there is something that has really, that I really learned and that I had to adapt when I left the corporate world and became an entrepreneur, is basically is a super humbling experience. Because I learned to start from scratch. I learned to really work again, put my hands in the dirt, become operationally, from being a bit in this ivory tower where everything gets served and you have an assistant and you have 40 guys in the office. I mean, in my case at 44, 45, where I was in charge of a region, suddenly you have to do everything yourself. You're the assistant, you do the PowerPoints, you print, you buy the phone, the pens, everything. And you're very strategic. So really it's a super humbling experience. And in fact, you have to adapt all the time, every day, but you have to embrace it because it's wonderful. At least I love it. So much about that. There must be surely some questions. I hope you guys wrote it down, and else, Doya, you will interrupt me if there is something in between. But until then, I'm going to migrate to my other presentation, which is going to be about Zumu. And I'm going to share my screen now, and I hope this will work. One second, please. Bear with me that I find a smooth transition. So I hope I can make it happen. Voila. Okay. So I continue, right? Soja, it's all okay. I go on. People must be overwhelmed. People tell me always I speak fast and a lot, and so I love to do these presentations because it's just me speaking.
So okay, just a second, Christoph, just remind everyone that if you want to ask a question, please feel free to raise your hand and we'll unmute you so you can ask your question. If you don't want your voice to be heard, type it into the chat box and then we'll answer. There we go. Now let's go to David.
Hi, David.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. I really, although I joined late, but I really appreciate the one I've been listening and what I've heard so far. I want to say kudos to the host and everyone. I want to say thank you, and give me an insight of what better plan ahead. But I'm having a little challenge when it comes to technology itself as a means in of boosting an economy. How can one, as a young man, I'm a graduate, in time like this, there's no job out there, and I'm into IT. So I'm also into hardware. Are you with me?
Yeah.
So I'm into computer hardware. So most cases, I feel like being bringing some innovation, putting some things together, adding some value to the standard of our system. For example, when I get a new gadget, the voltage I had more voltage to heat, and change the capacitor and IC in order for them to last long. And most of those products, they are working fine for me. I love it when it has a good quality. How can I use that to influence my community, bring up my own idea and innovation in times like this? Because it's very difficult me getting apart those required materials in the area I find myself. So most cases I'm discouraged. So people prefer to get those ones that doesn't last, those things that doesn't that you can't give you much value because of the price and every other thing. So they tend to get those of less quality. How can I convince them that, okay, getting higher quality requires higher part, and how can I influence my market strategy using it as a means of survival? How can I do that?
Yeah. Thanks, David. Christoph, you got that? Yeah. The equation.
No, I think, look, I think, I'm not an IT or a technology expert. As I said, I come from a very strong food and beverage background. But I think there are always, in my view, two equations that definitely you need to be able to tick them off. One is that you need to make sure that whatever your product that you're going to offer, no matter if it's superior to the product of a competitor or that is out there in the market, you need to make sure that it's fulfilling the need of what the buyer needs. So at the end of the day, price is also a variable. So if you are way better, you need to check how you're going to brand your product in a way that he's going to see the advantage, why he should buy you over the competitor. And the second one is, I think, proof of concept, which is related with the first one. You need to have a strong proof of concept before you enter the market. And definitely, even if you think you have a better product and at a better price, and you can go through the marketing mix and you tick all boxes, sometimes there are businesses which are extremely relationship-based. Banking, financing, insurance, private banking. Sometimes there are people who are willing to go to a more expensive private banker just because of relationship. And I hear from my friends which are in the IT business, whatever, sometimes there are big contracts. The contracts are tight. They tie you to a supplier. And no matter if you have a better product, people cannot go out. And there's a big relationship business behind that. So I don't know if that helps, but I'm not an IT expert, so sorry for, or a tech expert, sorry for that.
No, Christoph, I think you're right? Because what exactly is my potential customer or consumer trying to achieve, right? And how is he solving the problem today? And what is it that I'm bringing that indeed helps to improve the situation? Now, of course, the question still remains on that customer need. Is the high quality and all the bells and whistles that it comes with that is driving up the cost, is that part of what they need, or those are more nice to have? There's a lot of, of course, assessment that needs to be done, but as well, there must be some, but maybe he has not yet found that target audience that indeed needs this. Maybe there is the premium segment that needs this and he needs to, kind of look forward to. There's one more person whose hand is raised up to unmute, and that's Temi Tokoya Motalade. Can you please accept?
Okay. Good evening, and thank on this side. Thank you very much for your sincerity, Christoph. I really appreciate the sincerity you brought to your transition from being a dinosaur to an entrepreneur. The question is then, my question would be, how do you now manage your previous regular life? Like you said, it was quite challenging transitioning from the big boss to doing your printing yourself and all that. But in other areas apart from the business, how did this affect you and how were you able to move on?
Well, listen, I'm going to be, first, I like how you really emphasize on dinosaurs. Because I really don't feel bad about it, and everybody should be embracing it that we were dinosaurs when we were incorporated. But now, listen, a lot of people told me, you are exactly the corporate guy. You like to have your assistant and you have people opening the door for you, and which they didn't do. I'm exaggerating. But a lot of people thought I would never survive as an entrepreneur. But at the end of the day, you know, I like a lot to be operational. I like to be at the front. And when I was in sales, I really enjoyed it, even though also many people thought that wasn't true. So at the end of the day, I think because I was believing strongly in what I was doing, I didn't care and I didn't mind to go back to do everything myself. From basically when we created Zoom Move in the Philippines and we did our office, I went to look for the location. I signed the rental contract. I hired the designer. We designed the office. We bought the materials. I went myself with my partner to buy the air cons and to buy the tables, even the pens, everything. And basically we hired the people. It was a great process. I mean, when in your life do you get a chance to do everything from scratch, from buying the pen to hiring the HR person, I mean, or whoever? I mean, I found it great. But you know what is even better? Once you have done all of that, which is an extremely humbling experience, especially when you were like up there in the senior executive position, what is the best is when you're successful and you look back and you're at the Christmas party, and Doja knows Christmas parties are big in the Philippines. When you are at the Christmas party and you see all these people that are part of the company and they are part of your team and they embrace what the company does and what we have put together, you forget all that hard work. You forget all the details you've been involved in and all the time you have been doing this and you have been getting really your hands dirty. It is a blessing.
Christoph, before we go into the presentation, if you don't mind, we take two questions that are in the chat box.
Shall I take out the sharing screen and come back to it, or is it okay if I leave it?
Up to you.
I leave it there. Okay, advertising for Zoomu.
Next time we finally get to travel to Southeast Asia. Who knows when we're going to get into a plane again, but the next time we finally get to travel there with the kids, we'll stop by. Please. How did you handle distribution? Did you sell through your network?
Well, in which business it would depend. Let's say, I don't know if it's in the perfume and scent business that we have, because here we have shops. In Zoom Move, we have shops. But if it's in the perfume business that we have, the business model is basically that they sell everything through Instagram. So we basically do a lot of curating of the pictures of the product in Instagram. And then we have an online shop where they can basically order. And when we do fulfillment with Grab or Uber or whatever is available out there. And then normally, and a lot of people, there's no science behind it. A lot of people do that. But then what they have is maybe the more you grow, you start having 1, 2, or 3 pop-up shops in key locations where your target is, just that you can show the products and you can showcase the product for yourself. So in that business that I have there, that's basically how we did our distribution and the commercialization of our product.
You know, you talked a lot about partnerships, right? And I think a number of the businesses that you are into are partnerships. And one of the challenges that we face in this part of the world is people reneging on their commitments. And in some cases, you know, people just try to steal your idea and, you know, walk away after all that you have put into building it and commercializing it. What did you do to avoid that kind of thing? Or what are you doing?
Well, I would say this, going back to my initial part, when you are in your 40s and you have built a network and you have built friendships and you have built long-standing relationships, I think it helped me a lot. I think I curated very well the people I worked with, and I curated very well the people I partnered with that I didn't know. And I think you will be very excited many, many times
and want to move forward, and you don't want to stop and never give up and everything I also said. But at the end of the day, you have to be very, very, very careful with whom you partner. You have to make sure there cannot be only personal affinity. There cannot be only affinity in that we agree the concept is great or the idea and it's going to work. There has to be business affinity. There has to be an affinity in terms that we both know exactly what we're doing business-wise. We can be best friends and we can have a great product. But if we are not aligned in how we want to do business, it's going to be a big problem. And I think a big way to solve that, and that's, I mean, it's tough to say it, but it's like that. All partners have to have skin in the game. I tend not to believe to partner with people who don't put skin in the game. Because if they don't put skin in the game, what's the risk beyond investing some time? I think if you're going to go into something and your friend, even more so, put skin in the game to make sure that you have shared vested interest into whatever journey you're going through.
Last question now will be, if one were to incorporate a company to international standards in food production and agriculture, how would one meet up the standard?
Well, listen, having been in so many markets and having launched many products in the food and beverage environment, I think definitely regulatory FDA is a critical standard. I think, you know, there are always two avenues that needs to be checked. You need to understand the consumer. Your consumer or whoever is going to buy your product, if it's a wholesaler or an end consumer, I think you need to check that. But beyond, and that's what we always talk about. But the other two is, depending if it's an own production or not, you will anyway have FDA approval, regulatory permit, and so on, and those you need to be, when you are in agriculture and you are producing product for consumption, that and pharma industry and so on, it's critical. But there's also another one not to be underestimated, which is all the customs, duties, importing products and so on, in case you import products. It's another critical entry barrier, because there can be high duties, there can be high barriers to let you come in terms of quality, in terms of sanitation, and so on. So I think to live to the standard, you have to make sure you can comply with both customs and duty and the consumer. But the last thing I would say, and this is something I learned with my 20-plus year corporate employer, never, ever compromise on quality, ever. Quality, 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 quality. It doesn't mean it has to be the best quality. It means it has to be an acceptable quality to get over the threshold of your consumer. From the moment on, you start, you know, we always made an analogy. You start cutting your fingers, you end up cutting your hand. You know, cost savings, cost savings, cost savings. There's a moment, there's no hand there. There's nothing more you have to hand over your product with. So, quality, never, never compromise on quality. Maybe that's a very Swiss way of thinking, because, you know, Swiss watches, Swiss banking, and we are so much into quality and precision and whatever. But I think I live, again, in 7 countries around the world. Consumers, they like good quality. Again, it doesn't mean expensive quality. It makes good quality for them.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct about the quality, because you sell a bad product, you're only going to get trial. The customer is only going to buy it once. He's not going to buy it after that. So,
repurchase. Exactly. I mean, it's never about purchase. It's about repurchase.
Correct. Correct. So we're going to just please go ahead with Zoom Move.
Okay.
And then while you're at it, if you don't mind, I could interrupt you if questions
please
come in. And then, guys, please feel free to raise your hands so that you can ask your question.
Okay, Zumu. So again, Zumu is basically an amusement company for families, focused on children from 2 to 10, 12 years old. It's basically a zoo on the move. That's why Zumu. So the Zumu was
a little bit story about Zoomove. It was founded by two Spanish guys who were living in Singapore from different backgrounds. And basically, they were in their early 30s. They were having kids. And they were just thinking, and they were, one of them had several businesses. The other one was doing, studied in Switzerland, by the way, hospitality. And they were thinking to pivot into something else where they would be closer to their kids. And basically, they decided to do something that had to do with children so that they could spend more time with their children and doing some work that is related to their situation in life, which in fact is a great insight, guys. If you want to do something meaningful, do something that is relatable to where you are currently in your life, because maybe that will accompany you through your time. These guys were having kids, so they did two moves because it had to do with kids. So basically, they could basically, their kids were the guinea pigs of the project. Anyway, the thing is, in this chart, why I show this is because people go to malls still, and a lot all around the world. But at the end of the day, do they really buy in the malls? If you look at the different categories that are in malls, they have been completely obsolete because everything has been monopolized by online shopping. And basically, you need to have something to give to the consumer in terms of experience or lifestyle so that people still go to a mall. I mean, you still need to go to a cinema. You still need to go to a restaurant. But do you really need to go to Toys R Us to buy a game, a toy for your kid? Most of us order now in Amazon or whatever equivalent you have in your country. Why? Because it has become way more convenient. It's much less of a hassle. No surprise that Toys R Us basically filed for bankruptcy in the U.S. and in the U.K. And I think that will continue. And I think you guys must have heard, else I tell you that the mall buying in the U.S. is dramatic. Entire malls are disappearing. It's going to happen less fast in Asia because it's an extremely mall-driven society. But it may eventually happen. And this is what I was saying. I think it's going to be definitely the case that whatever is going to be successful will have to be related to some kind of a service. Entertainment, lifestyle, wellness, education, you name it. If there is a service there, the B2C equation will work because basically people will have to go for that out. I mean, you can do, of course, entertainment with Netflix, but if you want physical entertainment, it's going to be more difficult. If you want to go to a Disney World or to an amusement park like Zumu, it's going to be very difficult to replicate that at home, even if you have augmented reality and whatever. So you need to make sure that you have a service that is related to experiences, you know, where you can dine out, where you can go to a playground or a roller coaster. And basically, if you cannot tick a box on that, if you're not really green, then you have to be careful, depending which country you are, how far and how fast the mall dying will go on. And in fact, it's not one or the other. The online to offline platform is probably what is coming in the future. And if you see what many companies are doing, like Amazon is buying Whole Foods in the US, so they basically have an online shop and they're buying an offline shop. Kind of crazy, right? You're saying online is basically destroying offline. But in fact, what Amazon is doing, they're buying Whole Foods, one of the high-end retailers in the U.S., and they're going offline. It's not a contradiction because in the future, what's basically going to happen is that the offline world will still add value to the online world. Because as I said, even though you're going to have augmented reality and artificial intelligence and you will have these amazing lenses that you had with Google Glass or now there's a brand called Orcam from Israel, you will always want to also go offline to have that real experience in a physical store, in a mall or whatever. So at the end of the day, it's really important that you integrate both.
And probably in the future, what we believe at least will happen is that you will have a device that you go around, you put your AR on, and you try to give a voice command to get a service from Alexa, whatever, and wherever you will go, maybe after you've seen a Netflix movie at home, maybe you want to see an offline experience, you go to the mall, there will be face recognition. With that, you pay already for your ride in the amusement park and you will go and enjoy it. So I think that is going to be another, the future.
It's another definition of, the ROPO effect, right? Research online and purchase offline. This now is extended to experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's there to stay. So what did we do? When we launched our amusement park, we had rides, we had playgrounds like this. So this is one of our shops called Jollyfield. Doodlywood, which is like a kindergarten setup where the kids can do handicrafts, all 500 different games that they can play. And then That was our flagship store in Jakarta, Indonesia. Basically, it has both components. It has fun games. It has more edutainment-driven games. But I think what is more important is that we try to add a food concept inside so parents can go inside and stay with us while the parents eat, the kids go out. But in the benefit of time, I'm going to go directly to this part. The founder's idea from the very beginning was really great because they recognized this online, offline, online kind of interaction. And they knew that if they would go into the offline world, they would need to capture the kids also online. So they, from the very beginning, even without opening the first shop, they decided to invest into Salesforce. And basically buy themselves in, it's quite a significant investment, around $60,000 to $70,000, to be able to use the platform of Salesforce. And in every shop they opened, they put an iPad. So the kids had to basically register themselves, leave their data, phone, age, and so on. And then we would contact them, they would validate their account, and they would become members. So it was not just a loyalty thing. It was also a way to get their data and really be able to contact them. So what we started to do is to really collect hundreds of thousands of members across the 4 markets and the 100 shops and sell that data to basically malls who wanted to attract children
We basically told them, listen, if you want to know about the children to come to us and capture them for your mall, we can sell the data to you. So suddenly we had another division. So rather than only just having amusement for kids, suddenly we were a tech company because we were gathering big data and we were selling it to the retailers. At the beginning, maybe only to reduce the rental. And over time, it was adding value. So what we were about to do now, 2020, was really pivoting into starting to add sensors to our shop so that we can track where people move, what they go, which game they use more, so that we can also use that data to explain how the psychology of children when they play, what they do and what they look at and where they go. And that data nowadays is very valuable for companies who want to understand what children do and where they play. Unfortunately, COVID hit us. But anyway, we will get back to that once it's over. So at the end of the day, constant innovation, adding new games every year, one or two, three new games, making sure you're technologically connected and you combine on to offline is really the recipe to success here. If you are just a Disney World where there's only a theme park, but there is not the entire Disney monster behind, it's going to be difficult. That's the great thing about Disney and their integration into movies and cinemas and so on, and Disney Plus. And I think that's the route of the future. So that's basically it. I mean, in fact, if you go to Salesforce now, and I think you go under amusement, they still showcase us. Salesforce showcases Sumo as one of their SME partners worldwide, of something that we're really proud of. And this is it. This is my last chart. Just to tell you the footprint we have in the Philippines, in the meantime, 24 shops. Indonesia is our biggest market, almost 50 shops by now, so around 100 shops all around Southeast Asia with plans to grow, at least before COVID, and let's see what happens after COVID. But we are positive that we're going to somehow find a way. So that's it. That's it from me. I think, I don't know, I think I didn't meet the 40 minutes, but there were questions in between.
Very sweet. Thanks, Christoph. You know, Sumo, look, it's quite impressive. It's quite extensive. There's no doubt about it. And well done for that. And thank you for sharing with us this level of content and the depth. My question will be, you recall that when everyone registered for the course, they already pitched in a number of their questions. And there was a lot of questions about funding. In the beginning, I asked you, own money or debt? And you went for own money, right? How do you build your idea? How do you move it to commercialization when you have very little money?
I think there is, anyway, there's no black or white. I mean, I don't think there is own money or debt. I think there's also something in between, which is shareholders and partnering. So it's your money and your partner's money. And sometimes I think taking debt is also not bad. I mean, of course, I would say if I could have done all the businesses we did, partly with my money and part with debt, I would have done it. But I think you guys, same like me, I mean, those of you who are in Nigeria, I can imagine money is not cheap. In the Philippines, money is not cheap. In Switzerland, money is very cheap. You can get a loan for, I don't know, 1-2% interest. In the Philippines, if you get under 10%, you're happy. So the problem is, I mean, do you want to pay that interest for money? I mean, if you have no choice, okay, great. But if you can source yourself, your network and find venture capitalists or a PE or a family office or whatever who helps you through connections, through work network, through having a great elevator pitch and selling yourself, I'm always going to favor own money. I understand we don't have money. I understand it's a very difficult way it's very difficult to find ways to fund yourself. But if you have a chance to find yourself being part of it and find the funding, it's going to make your life way, way easier.
Very true. The other question I wanted to ask you was about designing, right? And so you find an idea, you've tested, you probably have even piloted with, you know, friends, family, relatives, what, and, you know, the acceptability level of your prototype and pilot is really strong, right? And now you feel that, now I can take it to the market. You take it to the market, let's say like David, who asks, he's taking it to the market now, and the market is saying, well, hey, we cannot afford this Rolls Royce. All we ask for is a Toyota. In that situation, you know, what do you do?
Well, first, that's what I was saying. I mean, proof of concept, I think you have to double, triple check and way beyond your idea. I mean, if you go to the market and you're faced in a situation where the market refuses your product because it's too expensive or it doesn't satisfy a need, I think you didn't do your homework. But let's assume it happened and the tide has changed, meaning you've done your homework. You've done it before COVID, you launched during COVID, as an example, and COVID changes the rule of the game. So you need to pivot. You need to pivot into something else. I mean, in our case, for Zumu, for example, we earlier on detected that this is going to maybe take a bit longer than planned. So we need to elevate our game in terms of online. So what can we do in online? I mean, we started offline and said we would go online. But the question is, how can we accelerate online now that we cannot do anything offline? And I think pivoting fast into understanding how the market is moving or how the insights change for whatever disruption that may have happened is key. I think I believe you can never sit relaxed on your back and saying, this is it, I don't need to, I can let it now move forward on its own and it will always move. I strongly believe that you have to monitor your idea and your concept and your company and your customers and consumers and go with them hand in hand and see how they evolve. First, because the market, the world has become so globalized, so complex that everybody has access almost to everything at any price and you can be disrupted when you least basically expect it. So I think being on your toes all the time, ready to pivot, have a plan B, C, D, E, F, which takes time, I know. But, you know, if you think it's losing time having a plan B, C, and D, yeah, maybe you thought it was that. Today with COVID, you will probably be happy to have a plan B, D, C, and E, and even further.
One more question I'm taking from the registration questions was, when do you take that bold decision? Now, I'd like to take you on something that you said. And you did say that don't quit until you have made it, right? In fact, we had a previous speaker who spoke a few weeks back and said, you know, you have to run it as a side hustle for at least 2 years before you leave your job. That was her own opinion. Now, in the event that your side hustle is a potential competitor to your employer's organization, where does that leave you from the point of view of, let's say, conflict or whatever?
That's a good question. Of course, I think at this point, the ethical part comes up, right? I mean, if you're going into something that is directly or indirectly connected or going to compete with it. I don't know. In that point of view, I'm a very, very ethically driven guy. So I want to be successful, whatever. But I think, depending which organization you're with, there is a lot of organizations now which encourage innovation within the company. So internal innovation and internal ways of founding companies, and they really encourage even funding for that. And they encourage even that you become independent later and you get on your own with that company. Maybe they hold a minority stake in it or whatever. If that's not the case, yeah, then you hit the hard point and you have to decide if you're going to be silent about it and you're going to move forward until you have it ready, and then you go. But of course you close the door there. Huh? I mean, you cannot go ever back. They won't like you. But at the same time, you know, I think, it depends a lot
which industry you are when you're going to do something like that. And I believe that if you're going into a business that is indirectly competitive and it's not exactly gonna compete with a multinational company, if you are in a big multinational $100 billion company, I think you can close one eye or two. But you know what is important? You have to make sure you have a non-compete agreement. Huh? Make really sure of that, because that can be dangerous.
Yeah. Thank you, Christoph. I'm going to just ask, guys, any other question before we start wrapping up? You can raise your hand. You can type it in. Christoph, thank you so much. I know now it's past 1 a.m., but we just want to make sure that we give, we give people the chance to have their questions answered.
I had my coffee, so I'm awake now.
Awesome.
Any more questions? Don't be shy. The dinosaurs are, they're extinct already. Nothing can happen.
Until they adapt. Okay, so I think it's safe to wrap it up now. And I believe that everyone has at least had their questions answered. They have their time in the sun to air their questions. And in the event that there's any other question, I think that I can always reach out to you. That's fine. Remember, guys, earlier as we started, we said that Christoph was going to offer 1 hour mentorship to an entrepreneur to support, of course, the development of your business. Is it okay if I make a selection? All right. So, David was the first one who asked the question, and he seems to have a current challenge on indeed getting his customers to embrace his product. So, David Oluwatosin, if you're still on, please either you type in, raise your hand or something. I can see that you're still on, but I hope you can hear us, so that we can connect with you quite quickly and then make sure that, oh yeah, there he is. Let's unmute him. David, please accept.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, that's fine then. So please could you just quickly message me privately with your email address so that we can connect you directly with Christoph. You can agree the hour for the mentoring. And you can get it going. We really, really wish you the very best. I'm sure that you can and you will find a way out to make this, to get this off the ground and make it a success.
Thank you. I am very, very happy for this one-time opportunity. I want to say thank you, Christoph. I want to say thank you, Eco Innovation Center. You know, it has been a challenge joining this program, but I just have to defy all odds to be part of it. And I just think that I am part of it, and I learned a lot. This program is priceless to me. It's priceless. So I want to say thank you so much.
Fantastic. Looking forward to have a one-on-one with you.
Great, David. So, Christoph, you talked about never giving up, and he didn't give up on joining the conversation, and here it is rewarding. So, guys, thank you so much. It's been a great time with you, Christoph. I cannot thank you enough. Thank you for stretching to do this. For everyone who joined, thank you. Thank you for being part of the conversation. Thank you as well, you know, for being open about it and expressive for everyone who asked the question. We do appreciate when it becomes a conversation and, you know, we can immediately tackle whatever concerns are in your mind. Again, when we started, we talked about taking action. And that for me is the song I continue to sing, because the best of plans are totally worthless if it is not backed up with action. And Christoph, you said, well said versus well done. Well done is what it is. Unless and until you take action, you cannot experience, you cannot know how it's going to be. You cannot know, what you could even get out of it at the end of the day. And truth be told, there will be disappointments. And that's life. There will be disappointments. There will be failures. And we will trip, we will fall. But we will rise again and we will try again. And that's the spirit. So that's where eventually the success is going to come from. Thank you, everyone, ladies, gentlemen. Christoph, we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
You take care. Have a wonderful night. Sleep tight. Stay safe. Everyone, have a wonderful night in whichever part of the world that you're in. My fellow Nigerians, take care of yourself. Huh? Be safe. Those numbers are growing. Please be safe.
We have a poll now.
We have a poll. Excellent. All right. Thank you, Coinfeller. Please, can we take our poll quickly? There we go. All right. Please, you can see the poll on the screen. We appreciate your feedback.
It's always a moment of truth now.
This is your scorecard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is. But so this is it. I regret that I've never been in Nigeria, honestly. My brother reminds me always, how come you never visited me here?
That's true, actually. Since he was here for 3 years, it would have been nice to visit.
Pending.
But it's not too late, no? So you never know, right?
No, of course not. Pending, you never know.
Once we can get into flights again, you never know.
We really never know when we're able to fly again.
Can we have more people taking the poll, please? And I tell you why. Because, like we said, we want to bring you relevant content. We want to bring you conversations that indeed will make the right level of impact. And of course, we want to know what you would like to hear. And we also want to be sure that we are bringing the right, we have brought the right content. So it's like a measurement and a futuristic intent. And thank you to those who are commenting. Rochelle, appreciate the session. Blessed Echo, thank you. Olufunto, thank you as well. Rose joined us from Kenya, and she's saying thank you for the encouragement and wise words. Chegu Martin says many thanks. Appreciate the session. Thanks to Eco Innovation Center. Thanks to Christoph and everyone who's on the call. Well done from Dupe. Thank you, Christoph, from Adetoro. And, you know, excellent facilitation. Congratulations to David. There are quite a few congratulations to David as well. So, yeah, I think. All right, there. David, thanks. I received the email address. Okay, Koinsala, you ready to close the poll?
Yes, I can now.
All right, great. Okay, thank you so much. Now we can sign off. Have a wonderful night. Happy night rest and take care.